Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I am very lucky to have Tim Sarantonio on the line with me today. Tim Sarantonio is a team member at Neon CRM and has more than 10 years of experience working for and volunteering with nonprofits. Tim has raised over $3 million for various causes, engaged in enhanced databases of all sizes, procured multiple successful grants, and formulated engaging communications and fundraising campaigns for several nonprofits. He has presented at international conferences and is a TEDx speaker on technology and philanthropy. Let's welcome Tim from his home in Niskayuna, New York. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks. I'm glad we can finally do this after so many scheduling, shuffling around incidents.
Oh, it's not like there's anything going on at the end of the year when it comes to nonprofits or anything.
Yeah, go figure, right?
Yeah.
So it has been a while since we've had our introductory conversation, as I like to do with many of my guests. We were talking about technology and nonprofits, among other things. How should we get that conversation started?
I mean, there's a lot of different swirling threads and conversations going on when it comes to the role that technology plays with nonprofits. But, ultimately, I think that a good conversation topic is in terms of the accessibility and usability of that. And kind of unpacking the struggles that nonprofits have when it comes to adopting this and kind of going from there.
I like it. And I'm wondering how best to frame the next question, which is, what if I am a small to medium sized nonprofit without all the resources in the world and yet I have to fuel the mission? How does one start to look at issues of accessibility?
The vast majority of organizations out there are small to medium size. And even that's up for debate of what that actually constitutes, right? Because you could see threads online. I actually was, in the middle of Twitter back and forth where people were saying, oh, a small nonprofit has 25,000 donors. I'm like, that's not. My Catholic school had a database of 25,000 people. Their capital campaign was 10 million.
I know many nonprofits that would kill for a database of 25,000.
That would kill. And are those like actual donors? Right. Are those people that you have on an email list? I remember talking to people and I remember, years ago, somebody's like, well, I have 1 million Facebook fans. I'm like, what does that mean? Doesn't mean anything.
And they all want to argue with you.
Yeah. there's a big difference between vanity metrics and things that actually move the needle.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
I talk about this all the time when we look at things like Facebook fundraising, for instance, which is a very hot topic. There's a lot of people that debate the pros and cons to that. Part of the Neon One Network, which is who I work for, if you folks aren't familiar with Neon One, we're a technology company that serves mission-driven organizations of all sizes. And depending on the type of thing that people use with us, it's going to be small or it's going to be all the way up to the enterprise.
Right.
The people who actually have all those tens of thousands of donors and can invest in good, solid, integrated technology. But from our point of view, good integrated technology should be affordable and accessible regardless of your size.
Right.
I've been saying that there's a lot of blame coming on the individual fundraisers or the organizations or the executive directors or the board of directors, and people are pointing at them and saying, you aren't following the basics of fundraising, and that's why you're in the position that you are. And I feel like that's blaming fundraising climate change on plastic straws.
Okay, that's an interesting analogy.
There's institutional and structural aspects that if you go back to the history of our industry, and people don't really unpack the role of technological structure when it comes to analyzing our sector. I encourage everybody, for instance, to read Philanthropy in America by Oliver Zunz.
Okay.
Amazing book.
Oliver Zunz. I'm writing this down. Okay.
Oliver Zunz. Yep. And he unpacks, going back to the 1800s, the 1900s, why we even have something like the United Way, which was basically, if everyone remember, you remember Monopoly, right?
Oh, yes.
the community chest?
Yes.
So do you know technically what a community chest is? Because I didn't until this book.
You know, I've heard that trivia, but I can't remember it.
Everybody knows the term, yeah. But at the end of the day, it's a pooled source for philanthropy. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. It's a fund that people can pay into one spot, and then the fund doles out the money to what they see fit.
Interesting.
That's that. And there's structural differences between that and a community foundation, but their kind of root genesis is the same.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, actually. Yes.
Now, how does that relate to technology, though?
Right.
So mass philanthropy going back to the 1900s, and really it got its structure and the things that we do today back in World War One, pretty much, right? Like right. The Red Cross, you know, tuberculosis, a lot of healthcare stuff, a lot of universities were the primary benefits. And that's actually when you look at where the money still is today.
Yes.
That healthcare. And universities are typically the realm of if an organization has a lot of money, there's a very good chance that they are those types of organizations when you look at the vertical compared to, oh, I don't know, arts and culture.
Right.
Now, why is that important? Because that means that those organizations drive what is being adopted from a technological standpoint. Because if you go back to the founding of the primary technology company in our space specific to nonprofits, Blackbaud, 1981, they were founded as a response to an ad that a private school had in Manhattan. So there's institutional elements of, okay, those types of organizations have the money and hence they can drive the technological conversation.
Right.
And from there, they invested and they grew and now they're, you know, a $800 million behemoth in our space.
Yes.
But the reality is that when you're there, you don't necessarily have to invest in things that are affordable or things that actually talk because you got the market share.
Right.
So the reality, though, is that where we are today is that those types of things are being, and I hate the term, but it is being disrupted.
Okay. Well, first of all, why do you hate the term?
Why do I hate the term disruption? I think it's thrown around too willy-nilly in Silicon Valley, both the show and the actual, you know, the entity and idea of what Silicon Valley represents.
Yes, yes.
You know, oh, like, let's disrupt trucking.
Right.
You know? I saw an article about that the other day where it's like, Jeff Bezos is going to disrupt trucking. And you know what? He probably is. Uber is doing that. Amazon is doing that. There's a lot of structure when it comes to those types of things where, yeah, that is actually true. I don't think we've seen it in the nonprofit space yet, but I think it's coming.
I think it is coming. I think that's right.
And there's a lot of work going into that, and there's a lot of people at the high level that are investing in those types of things, like Microsoft and Salesforce are driving a lot of this conversation, and they even announced, you know, that Salesforce is going to be shifting over to Azure, mm-hmm. Or whatever it's called. So, you know, those things ripple down, but at the end of the day, like, I don't know, do you typically work with the small organizations, Mickey? Or
yeah,
or,
in my own personal consulting work, I do work with the smaller side of medium as well.
So you walk into there. What are they doing on a typical day when they're interacting with technology?
They're keeping track of their mission-oriented activities and oftentimes not that well. Mm-hmm. And in fact, most of the clients I get are underusing technology.
Okay. And so what are the things that, like, if they're going to even invest in something, what do you find that they're actually even bothering to pay and pony up money for?
Ooh, that's a very good question.
If you look at N10, yeah. Which is the kind of the one of the larger networks of analyzing technology usage in the nonprofit sector, they've done some studies on this. And respondents typically, they're, I think it's something like maybe 12%. And it also, they break it down by budget, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, a larger or it's actually not that wildly different between a supposed enterprise organization and a small nonprofit. Like, we're talking a few percentage points.
Yeah.
But when you have 12% of a $10 million budget versus a 12% of an $80,000 budget,
yes.
Which was the first nonprofit that I worked for, mm-hmm. you know, $80,000, and that included staff. That was me.
Yeah.
that was my executive director boss. Uh-huh. And that was the office. And I got a computer, you know, right. That was it. And so those types of things are important here in terms of accessibility, because it's even the idea of what are you even managing these things on, right?
Right.
Like, I saw an article earlier today, this morning, where the VP of marketing for Apple was like poo-pooing Chromebooks.
Interesting.
Because he's like, they're cheap. All it is for testing. It's like, yeah, well, iPad's expensive, man.
Yeah.
Can't give everybody in Harlem, you know, PS135, an iPad.
Right.
At least with current pricing and structure that you have.
Right. It would be disruptive if Apple would kindly change their pricing structure to make it
easier. They're not going to.
Of course not.
They're not
going to
bother. That's ingrained in the culture there.
I think so. Now, it didn't used to be this bad, but it has gotten worse for sure.
Steve Jobs hated philanthropy.
Oh, did he really?
He was not a philanthropist, and he was very upfront about that. Oh. He did philanthropy.
Yeah.
Here and there, but he never, that was something that Bill Gates criticized him about.
Yeah.
Because there's even a new documentary about Bill Gates and the foundation and how they make their decision making. Interesting stuff. Problematic, but interesting. I mean, there's a lot of equity things that are wrapped up with technology that I think people are afraid to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, it's not comfortable to address the fact that there's economic and racial and gender disparities when it comes to the industry.
Yep, that's right.
There's a lot of people who you go on Twitter and the first thing they say is, I can't believe that you're bringing race into this. You know, we're all struggling.
Yeah.
It's like, well, some more than others. You know, well, there was a recent thing on Twitter where a consultant basically criticized the fact that AFP was doing a initiative analyzing sexual harassment of women in the industry. That was his argument. Oh, well, we're all struggling.
I admit I'm a little bit stunned. Why? What?
Well, everybody was stunned, and he's eventually hit. He, well, I know I basically was like, here is an academic analysis of the salary differences mm-hmm. between men and women, and I pointed that out and said, you know, where's your data? Because he kept demanding data of right. the women only, by the way.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, it was textbook. It was just like textbook when it came to the responses. And then he just ended up blocking everybody, and now he's hidden, you know, his tweets.
So I wonder if he still works in the sector.
I mean, he's going to, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to put sunlight on this stuff.
Sure.
I mean, what do you see in terms of access for these organizations when you're working with them?
I see them struggling. I think that a lot of people are using their own home equipment to do things online. I think cloud computing has actually made things a little bit easier in terms of getting access to various tools, but in terms of reliability of equipment and having technology plans that make room for upgrades whenever they're necessary, those things are very rare to find in the sector.
Well, when I worked at my last job before Neon, mm-hmm. and actually yesterday was 8 years working for Neon.
Oh, way to go. Congratulations. So, 8 years is quite an accomplishment.
I know. Before that, it was like, okay, I got a year in.
Right.
On to the next.
Right.
I mean, that was a bad fundraiser for a while. That's the reality, is that as a white male, I was basically allowed to fail and fail upward.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, we don't allow people to fail in some ways. You know, you go to an organization and it's like you get unrealistic budgetary expectations, but they cut your resources. I remember doing a workshop on the Fundraising Effectiveness Project, which is the largest data set of individual fundraising data. So us, Bloomerang, Donor Perfect, we all feed data monthly in an anonymized way,
right.
in a big aggregate database. And it tells us giving trends down to the month in terms of retention. And so there's some really cool things that, it came from AFP and Bill Levis and who created the 990. And so there's some structural things that we analyze when it comes to donor retention, and they have a whole workshop. And I remember doing a workshop and a woman brought in her budget, and her board had told her, okay, we're going to add 3 new fundraising events. And even though the annual fund is the only thing that made, you know, net revenue last year, we're going to cut that because you can just use the same materials And now here's your budget for these events that you're going to have to create from scratch.
You can't see me, but I'm shaking my head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was too. And that's the key thing, is that I think that organizations need to embrace a data-driven decision-making model to advocate for their own salary.
Sure.
Look, so, I've raised us X amount of money. I need a raise.
Right.
You know, we don't do that enough.
Right. Well, let me ask then. I mean, this is sort of the heart of the issue, is how do you get that nonprofit to better use any kind of data, right? I mean, not only to collect it, but to, let me take a step even further back. Does a fledgling nonprofit simply look at best practices, make their best guesses, and get started with that, and then use those initial test cases to get the data to figure out what happens next? Is that how they should do it?
The technology, so, and this goes back to what I mean by fundraising climate change being blamed on plastic straws. The onus is on the technology sector to bake in those best practices so it's just easy to do. That's our job. And a bunch of software companies do that very well, I would say. So like a good example, not Neon. I mean, I think we do, and I can get into that, but a good example that isn't us is Bloomerang.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Bloomerang bakes in key retention metrics and even things from Tom Ahern when you're like writing something where it'll do the Ahern test, right? Where the Ahern test is like, if you use the word I a bunch of times, you're throwing that letter out. And so these are things that they take very seriously, and I respect the living heck out of what they do. You know, we've taken it a step further and baked in not just retention, but the entirety of the fundraising effectiveness project's key performance indicators into Neon CRM.
Yeah.
And then we actually, I was thrilled, we're about to launch a new product called Neon Raise. And Neon Raise is, I can't afford a SaaS fee.
Right. Right.
But I need to raise money. So here is a thing that doesn't cost a monthly fee. And we baked in the entirety of the KPIs into that. So even the small, I just got started nonprofit will be able to look at that and go, oh, great. My growth in giving is 5%.
Right. And it's become a menu option instead of something that they have to sit down and calculate.
Oh, we don't even give it the option in Neon Raise. It's just like, this is it.
Yeah.
You're looking at this, and we're going to shove this in your face, you know, and recency and retention and stuff like that. Those are baked in even down to the donor profile. And then what's nice is that if somebody's like, this is too small for me, then it will upgrade into the full CRM. And that's the biggest thing that we come across all the time, is the data migration process can be a nightmare, where people are trying to get things to match up. And you know, we see this all the time, where people, they enter something into an Excel spreadsheet, or they download it from their PayPal or whatever, and none of it matches.
Right.
And so you can't, you know, one Mickey in one, you know, from the Facebook thing is not the same Mickey in the PayPal button is not the same Mickey from the, you know, the 5K.
Right.
But they're all you.
Sure. Right.
And that's the big thing. And that's where we need to go as an industry, is data hygiene. None of this matters if people can't actually track any of the data.
True. But can you automate that? I mean, isn't it sort of data is only as good as data is entered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you can.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think you can. So the approach that we take, and other companies do this, Kindful does a very good job of this, for instance, too, is curating the integrations around the ecosystem.
Okay.
So what we do is I kind of oversaw this a few years ago, because I saw this as a problem. And I said, for us, I'm like, I can't control what everybody else does, but I can control what Neon does.
Yeah.
And so basically, anytime somebody builds into our CRM, we review it, and then we review it in the broader scheme of everything around it, meaning, if somebody plugs in and they have a text to give platform,
yep,
and it pushes in donations, if you push in the donations into the event registration field, but you're calling it a donation, I'm going to kick you out.
I see. Okay.
And if you call something a campaign, and this happened recently where we have an advocacy platform that's built into us and they're expanding their integration and they're like, well, we call these campaigns. So we're going to push this in into a special area called campaign. We're like, no, you're not.
Right.
Because we already have a campaign field. Use that or call it something else.
Right.
And this is the problem when you get into some of the other ecosystems out there is that they don't curate it.
Right.
They just say, well, it's open. Pay somebody $25,000 and they'll figure it out for you.
Right.
But it's free.
So we're running out of time very quickly here. And I do want to give Neon its due. I would like to give them a quick plug, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And explain how Neon does what it does well for the small to medium sized crowd, if that's applicable, and how much it would cost a person to get into it.
Well, like I mentioned, the new thing with Neon Raise doesn't cost anything.
Right.
Other than like the success that you have with the platform dictates, you know, what the transaction fees that you're paying. That's it.
Right.
Right. So it's a set transaction rate. But even the CRM is, you know, could be as low as $49 for the entry thing. We have people who are paying much more than that. But the reality is that that's just the CRM. We also have peer-to-peer fundraising with Rallybound. We have a Giving Day platform that actually powers at no cost, typically to the nonprofit, the largest giving days in the U.S., like North Texas Giving Day. $50 million dollars in one day, Mickey.
What? That's outrageous. Wow.
And so what we're going to do is make sure that that data then can get ported into something like Neon Raise or Neon CRM or interact with our peer-to-peer. We have an arts and ticketing platform because that's a very, very different part of the sector.
Yes.
So arts people, you know, it's got seating and box office management, really cool stuff there. And then we even do Civicor's client case management, so the back-end operations, because I'm personally obsessed with financial transparency and data transparency. End-to-end.
Yeah.
So being able to say, I got the money all the way to, and then it helped this program, that's what we got going on. And that's a little bit more of an investment, but it's worth it to get all that stuff out of paper. And then we tie all this together right now through Neon Raise, which is our Neon Pay, which is a dedicated payment processor that anybody can tie all of this stuff together. So if I'm using Rallybound and Neon CRM, I got one payment processor for reports and reconciliation. I don't have to go to multiple places.
Right.
And then your finance people are happy.
Right.
And it auto calculates the donor covered fees that Rally or that, you know, everybody can cover.
Yeah.
So then even the transaction rates might not cost you anything. So very, very affordable. But again, we're designing things even for, and this is maybe another conversation for another time, but we're even designing something that can integrate all of that and beyond into this is the one Mickey record.
Right.
Basically. So if you see me, I'm winking, but we got some really interesting things coming on there, but it has to interface with something like Salesforce.
Yeah. Or
absolutely. What Microsoft is doing or what Blackbaud is doing. So we're being very intentional that to say we're an open ecosystem, but we're just curating it. So if you use Salesforce, like have at it, right? Like we love it. We love it when people do that. You don't need to use our CRM if you love your CRM,
right. But
we still got some awesome stuff. So that's a little bit about what we do. And I'm really appreciated that we were able to talk today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I
know I'm all over the place, but
You know what that does? It tells me is that we need to do this again. and I hope we can do this again sometime in the near future.
That would be my pleasure.
Because it sounds like there's many other developments and I think it would be cool just to help nonprofits overcome their fear of using the vocabulary of technology. I think that, you start throwing around certain terms relating to data manipulation and data mining and it just scares people.
So, I know. Well, maybe that'll be our next talk is demystifying the idea of, maybe just like integrations.
Right.
Maybe we could talk about that because I love talking about that.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Let's do it. Tim, thank you for taking the time today. I know you're very, very busy. Like I said, I look forward to the next time we get to do this.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on the Nonprofit Snapcast.
Cool. Thank you.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. We will see you again with another episode in about a week.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.